Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Call-in show. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and our very special guest tonight is Mr. A.S. Coomer. A.S., are you there?
I am.
All right, great. I'd like to share your biographical sketch here. A.S. Coomer is a writer and musician. His work has appeared in over 50 literary magazines, journals, and the like. Novels include Rush's Deal, The Fetishist, Shining the Light, and The Devil's Gospel, which is forthcoming. He runs Lost, Long Gone, Forgotten Records, a record label for poetry. He co-edits Cockleberry Press and Independence Micro Press for poetry. Five of his original compositions are recorded live with cellist Sarah Gibson, and these particular compositions are featured in the Museum of Americana's American Songbook. His poem, I'm Not Sure How I Feel About the Sound, won the 2016-17 Thelma Prize, which was judged by Catfish McDarris. He's been nominated for a Pushcart Prize 3 times. And if you'd like to reach him personally, his address is ascoomer.com. So, A.S.,
yes, sir.
Were you destined to always be a poet?
I think so. I've been writing since I was little. Never really stopped. It's one of those habits that stick.
Why do you think poetry is important?
Well, I think poetry is important because it's the closest you can get to living somebody else's life. Poetry gets beyond all the social niceties of a novel. It gets right down to the marrow of the bone.
Well, let's begin this part of the journey. Please share some of your work.
Sure. I'm going to start with a poem called Feeble, which begins with an epigraph from William Stafford from his poem A Ritual to Read Each Other. He said, "For it is important that awake people be awake, feeble. We are all capable of sweeping beauty and inescapable rage. We, floating freely like early summer thunderheads, suspended like dust and ash after the blast, move in patterns. The fog clung close to moving water still warm from yesterday's sun, heads bowed, eyes closed. Hearts on mute, minds stuck in another season until motion, a jarring jerk, a shove or flounce, brings us back into the present, into the now, Tao shrouded and resplendent in complementing dichotomies, and we open our feeble eyes." Thank you.
Beautiful. Please share another.
Sure. This next one is a poem called No Lynn, which is the name of a river that was in the backyard that I grew up in Hardin County. So No Lynn. I want to be that place where the cloud white meets the white and tan of the river birch. I want to live in the ripples of the No Lynn as it laps smooth the silt stones, caresses both bank and root as it flees towards the ever larger body. I want to be the place for sunrise and sunset, a warm spot for basking snapping turtles, an eddy pool for midday soaks. I want to matter in a subtle way, a more pure form of existence, tried and true and blue, everything in motion but standing timeless, there and nowhere else and without distinction, Save the Form. Thanks.
Would you mind rereading that poem again? It's beautiful.
Sure. Nolan, I want to be in that place where the cloud white meets the white and tan of the river birch. I want to live in the ripples of the Nolan as it laps smooth the siltstones, caresses both bank and root, as it flees towards the ever larger body. I want to be the place for sunrise and sunset, a warm spot for basking snapping turtles, an eddy pool for midday soaks. I want to matter in a subtle way, a more pure form of existence, tried and true and blue, everything in motion but standing timeless, there and nowhere else, and without distinction, save form. Thanks.
You know, writers and poets write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to their audience. Others write because staying silent is not an option. Why do you write?
Well, I write for a lot of different reasons, and it's really depending on the project I'm working on. Most of the time I write because I'm just not good at anything else. it just seems easier for me to block aside a period of time and collect my thoughts as opposed to, you know, to talking or interacting in another way. I just feel like I'm more comfortable when I have time to collect myself and actually arrange some sentences and words in an order that makes sense to me.
Well, let me ask this question. In terms of your relationship with poetry, how has it developed and changed throughout your lifetime since you've been writing from a very young age?
Well, I think like most everybody else that wrote in their god-awful teenage years, you know, I was really woe is me and life is, you know, hard and everything is unlucky and all of that. And, you know, we all work through that as writers. And I think now I'm really more focused on how language works and like how to string together a couple sentences to convey a message in one way or subtly in another way. Stories are always changing too. I like the fact that you can tell a very expansive story in five sentences or whatever, depending on how you lay out the words.
Well, you're very talented. Please share another piece.
Sure. This one's a little bit longer. It was originally published in Red Fez, and it was nominated for a push cart. It's about depression and anxiety and how to deal with that kind of thing. It's called The Old Skins of the New Snake. Some days I just can't make it work, no matter how hard I try. Blame it on chemistry, the winter, money, the GOP, waking up on the wrong side of bed, whatever. I don't think it really has a cause. I think it just is. Things just don't fall into place, and you start to feel like the kid that can't figure out that the triangle will never, ever fit into the circle. The other kids are staring, saying things like, look at this retard. Kids can be so cruel, and watch out for the adults they grow into, with their castigating eyes and snatches of cacophonous little snickers. And you sit there, the triangle getting exponentially heavier in your shaky preschool hands, the circular hole seeming to shrink with each passing second into oblivion, or at least the subatomic plane of existence. Sweat streaks across your furrowed brow like wayward lightning strikes. Your stomach decided to burrow through your feet on its way to China. The race suddenly seems lost before you even realize there was a race. Some days just feel like that. Today is one of them. And where do you go from there? You still have work. Shit needs doing. I don't know. I want to tell you that I'll never quit. Never will beat me down, can't kill me, motherfucker, but I don't know anymore. Sometimes, some days just feel like that. Home is where the heart is, that's what they tell you, but what if your heart never even felt at home in your chest? Always a foreigner, a stranger there, or worse, the guest knowingly outliving his welcome? Where is home then? When will I find it? I don't know. Some days, I guess I start to sound like the depressed Socrates, the bummer version, intoning, all I know is that I don't know how to be happy. Or maybe, more like the lethargic Heraclitus, I'd step out into the ever-changing, never-the-same-river-twice river for the first time, but it just seems like too much work. And maybe he's right. Maybe change is the central driving point of the universe, logos moving along like the millions of water molecules making up the never-the-same-river-twice river and shedding its old meaning. The old definition, sinking somewhere back in the middle of the swamp-shrouded delta, like the old skins of the new snake, coming to stand for something more along the lines of everything flows and nothing stays, including you. Thanks.
Tell me about the construction of this particular piece of poetry. Do you sit and think through every word of every stanza, or do you write freely and allow words to just flow?
Usually when I'm writing a poem, it just flows, and a lot of the pairing and word choice discussion in my head comes in the editing process. This one was more of a stream of consciousness thing. I think I wrote it all in like 15 minutes of just hard scribbling and had to whittle like 4 pages down into this page and a half poem.
15 minutes.
Roundabout, yeah. It was a
So thoughts in your head needed to come out.
Yes, sir.
And it took only 15 minutes for them to materialize. It's a fantastic piece, extremely intricate. You know, I really like the line, where do we go from here? You still have work, shit needs doing. I don't know. I want to tell you that I'll never quit. Never will you beat me down. Can't kill me, motherfucker. But I don't know anymore. Sometimes some days feel just like that, and they do.
Yeah.
People deal with depression all the time in many ways, shapes, and forms. And it's an important issue to be addressed.
I agree. I've struggled with depression most of my life, and it seems like art, poetry in particular, writing, really help. There's something about placing a part of you into something else and shaping it that it really helps relieve some of these symptoms of like lethargy and all of this. And I think writing is a big deal for me, especially for that. It keeps me sane most days.
You know, I too have struggled with depression myself, and I think the one line that really struck me out of all of the lines is what if your heart never even felt at home in your chest? I think that line really stands out to me. Tell me about that particular line.
Well, when you deal with issues such as depression and anxiety for a long time, the people in your life typically – despite their intentions, are going to be dragged down by it, and they're not always going to want to deal with these issues. And it is hard to live with somebody who does struggle with depression and anxiety. And eventually, I mean, I feel sometimes that I wear out my own welcome in my own home sometimes. You know, and that's kind of where it came from. You always hear home is where the heart is, and well, sometimes I feel like I don't know if I even have a working heart. You know.
Yes, I do understand 100%. Let's share one more piece before we take a break.
Sure. This next one is a little different in subject matter. I was driving in Toledo, where I used to live. I just moved back to Western Kentucky, and I saw this woman standing on the side of the road waiting on a bus, and it felt like I was staring at like a Renaissance painting. So I wrote this poem. It's called Incipient. Mary Magdalene's got track marks, crusty little craters in the crooks of each bone-thin twig of an arm, jangled spangles of witty bangles and junky charm. She's 6 months pregnant, hallowed, alas, be not prenatal, an under-ripened pear, bruised bits of pewter blue and moldy white, slips the clumsy clutch of another's hand-me-down, threadbare state fair t-shirt, to fall and hang, sweat, stink, and lurch. In the first hazy rays of an ash-flecked Wednesday, most things have been long since smoked down the cinders. With the smoke rising from a bent cigarette's red-eyed ember, still damp from a night on the outside side of a slantwise windowsill, with her swollen lips cracked and chapped, striped like a stomped-on box of Cracker Jacks, but curled upwards and spiderwebbed with love and loss etched out in premature cracks, the faintest simile of a smile, the factory preset of smirk, a dime store Mona Lisa served with papers for welfare fraud, and the sun showed no halo. Like all pilots, the hole in the plot, the slip in the seams, the troubling line just beginning to bust up the beam is filled in after the high and mighty green light. Thank you.
All right. What do you view as being the role of poetry in modern day society?
Well, I think it's the great leveler. No matter what your position, where you live, if you read and listen and go to poetry readings, you're going to experience like the multitudinous variety of other people's existence. You can live in other people's shoes. You can see from their eyes. It's the great leveler, in my opinion.
So empathy is important.
Oh, it's paramount.
Tell me more about empathy. I traveled the country as a performance poet, and many of my works discuss empathy through poetry. So it's a fascinating topic, the way that empathy can be used through poetry to bridge gaps, to build in terms of lived experiences. So it's a very important mechanism for understanding.
Oh, for sure. I think a lot of times, too, you don't realize how involved you are with a poem, especially if it's got a narrative basis to it, how far involved you are in somebody else's existence, even when you're writing it. And that's not even talking about going to a reading or listening to a poet read their work. I like to pick different situations and people sometimes and try to draft poems around them, and that kind of helps me give a different understanding of different ways of living. And empathy is huge in poetry. I mean, because you can't really understand poetry. Like, I hear lots of people talk about how poetry is a derogatory term, like, oh, poetry. But that there's a lack of willingness to listen and live an experience that goes involved with saying things like that.
That's a fascinating topic, AS, and we'll be right back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'd like to welcome you to Quintessential Listening Poetry. I'm here with our very special guest, Mr. A.S. Coomer. A.S., please continue this part of the journey and share some more of your beautiful work.
Oh, sure. This next poem I'm going to read is entitled Swan Creek, which is a park in Toledo, Ohio. So Swan Creek. The creek lazes by, swirling leaves, golden or green, complete or partial, yet still somehow whole, glisten in the sweetest snatches of early afternoon rays, and this, the first days of what'll become another dog-eared summer. The shirt, sleeveless and recently laundered, already clings to skin prickling with beads of an unencumbered sweat. Here the shade is a haven for singing birds, for barking bushy-tailed squirrels, for squinty-eyed furtive moles, the minuscule black specks, some insect I cannot for the life of me place, that always find the most recent of my wounds. The dead-skinned carp, gaping dolt-like, open-mouthed and blankly staring, and here, right here, with legs outstretched, shoes removed, feet both in dirt and grass, is me. Or, more specifically, the most recent reincarnation of whatever these mingled cells and fused atoms considers as me. Hello, I think I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
All right, continue.
Sure. This next one just recently came out in the Ghost City Review. It's called Peculiar. Into the dying day, a little boy that can speak to snakes, a tree that spills no leaves, a familiar scent whiffed as you flee into an unknown part of town. Meant to be, or just another lapse of the peculiar, understated understanding of the way things are or should be. One of the great regrets of my life is not trying, or not trying hard enough. Choose the form of your redemption. Is intention beside the point? Teach me about wintergrass. 1. A quiet place. Sing to me about the nighttime wings. 2. The drawer that served as your first crib. Ignore the rising sun and the sad-eyed day to come. 3. A damp piece of earth no one will ever find again. Home and the will to be withered, wayward, and free. Give me death in bites sized for my prized decline in appetite, small and shrinking, at fault and shrieking. Show me, show me, show me. Thank you.
How does a poem begin for you, with an idea, a form, or an image?
Sometimes, just like the interplay of certain words when they fall together, like an uncommon, you know, structuring of a sentence or something, maybe like two or three words that I just hear somewhere. Other times it'll be an image. I'll see something that really strikes a chord in me, and I feel like I just need to have a moment and just write about it. So it varies.
Varies. All right. What are some of the predominant themes in your work?
Lately, with the election of Donald Trump, I've written way more political pieces than I ever thought I would. I would never have considered myself a political poet, but I've got several that I'll read eventually. So that's a big theme lately, but also just music always comes up, and stories. I tell so many stories, whether it's in fiction or poetry. I think there's so many stories you can tell. And sometimes you just want to structure words in a way to make a pattern. Sometimes just wordplay is beautiful. And a poem for the sake of really fun wordplay is a poem in itself.
Let me ask you a question. Your poem, Bakery Under New Management, is that about Donald
mm-hmm.
Trump?
It is.
I thought so.
Yeah, that poem is.
I had to read it a number of times to pull that out. But I did find
yeah.
it, and again, it's a very powerful piece, and hopefully you plan to read it tonight.
Yeah, I can read it now. I wrote it that Wednesday after he was elected, because, you know, Donald Trump won the election, but he lost the popular vote. It was like 65 million yeah. to like 62 or 63 million, and I remember both me and my wife, we both had different things going on the evening before election night, and we both did not even fathom that he could be elected. We didn't even see it happening. And so I remember the next day I woke up and I was just floored by it. She was floored by it. And I wrote this poem, which I'll read now. It's called "A Bakery Under New Management." The house is quiet. The cool November morning has fogged up the insides of our badly in need of repair windows. The wind rattles leaves just as easily as the panes of ancient glass, trembling in the wake of the future quake, set back in peeling white crumbling frames. My wife is shaking, scared but cried out. I sit in stunned silence, feeling every bit the unwound, nickel-plated D string of an overworked guitar. In our minds, we both turn over frustration and disappointment in equal portions on the spit-sizzle, muddled cogitators in our heads, trying to fathom how we, these United States, let this come to be. Collectively quiet, together but alone in this morning, a rarity really, something meant to be enjoyed, the two of us home and awake, a pot of coffee steaming in the dark, the hardwood cool under the pad of bare feet, pajama bottomed and sweater topped, waiting for the sun to illuminate, to show us that this day will come to pass like dust slowly settling after the blast. But this too has been taken. Taken right alongside the hopes of a reprieve, a slip, slide, and fall from the sieve of misfortune, and placing grace, now like bitter purple grapes, in the hands of a people who can't even look one another in the eye, a people who don't acknowledge the toil of sisters, the art of brothers, the humanity of all. Filtering through kernels for boll weevils, but on finding the slithering snake, orange, unfurling and hissing, we decided to give him the keys to the bakery. The flour could have made flaky rolls of golden honey wheat, nurturing warmth for all those left out in the cold, a grain for every pang and growing pain of our burgeoning wet-eared democracy. But we chose to disenfranchise the weak, piggyback another set of burdens on the tired shoulders of those already carrying too much, salt the batter so bitter with the vile bile of a bigly bigotry, make the sweetest treats even further out of reach for everyone but the elite, and eat shit cakes. Thanks.
Well, it was the verses where you mentioned the slithering snake, orange, unfurling, and hissing. And I said,
yeah.
Hey, this is Donald Trump. Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And when you also said bigly.
Yep.
I said, this is it. This is it.
Yep.
Well, let me ask this question. Where do you write?
Well, poetry is one of those things that I'll write wherever I go. I usually have a notebook on me, or also have this ginormous note in my phone that's like a billion pages long of just ideas and fragments of ideas. So with poetry, I'll write that anywhere. Fiction, I'm more structured. I set aside time and write every morning.
Okay. Well, let me ask this question. You've mentioned that you also write fiction. In what important ways does fiction differ from poetry?
I think fiction, a lot of it really relies more on context. You've got to build worlds and establish relationships, whereas poetry can just come out of the ether and just slap you in the face with some sort of truth or emotion.
With that, please share again.
Sure. We're on the Donald Trump train, so I'm going to go ahead and read another one of those. This
All right.
is called American Standard, which a preface. American Standard is a company that makes urinals and toilets.
Okay.
So, American Standard. The pisser in the bar was branded American Standard. I shook and moped back out into the dim, dingy dive, the air cool and somehow overly wet, and ordered a double. Donnie Trump was up on the TV, looking all jack-o'-lantern orange, mouth pursed, then streaming, pursed, then streaming, like an anus. The bourbon came and I downed it. I told the barkeep that the pisser was right, that this was the new American standard. She turned to the TV and I shook my head. Wrong one, I told her. She gave me that look, the one all wary barkeeps give, the one that says, tread easy, mister. I ordered another, paid my tab, and left. The streets were overly wet, shining in the first rays of a burgeoning day, a sickly yellow sheen covering it all. Humidity already making everything stale, piss, sticky. American standard, all the way. Thanks.
you know, how has your idea of poetry, in terms of what poetry is and what poetry can do, changed since you began writing?
I've really, digging through and reading a lot of different poets has really changed my worldview on poetry. I thought when I first started writing poetry that poetry was a highly personalized thing. It had to be almost kind of like a diary entry or something. And then, you know, I've stumbled upon other people, other poets, and realized that you can make these great epic works. Like there's novels told through poetry, book length wise. You know, the poetry is such an adaptable field that you can really almost do anything with it. You can do, you know, like a single sheet of paper can become a work of art if you do like word art poetry. You can structure it in a certain way to make an image, even with the words. They could be nonsensical and still kind of convey some sort of other meaning.
Well, name three of your favorite historic poets. And what about their work are you drawn to?
Well, I can tell you what I've been reading lately.
Or contemporary poets.
Yeah. My tastes tend to change every single day and almost every minute of the day. If you ask me what my favorite albums are today, they'll be different from they were yesterday. So poets and writers, it's constantly going to change. I've really been enjoying a lot of Billy Collins lately. I know he's not old. He's new, newish. You know, he was a poet laureate for a long time. A lot of Bukowski still speaks to me, and a lot of it doesn't. But, I mean, that's the way it goes with somebody with an output that big. I really like, there's a poet in Toledo, Ohio, that I really, really enjoy reading. His name is Bob Phillips. He's been writing for, I don't know, 40, 50 years or so. And he's one of my favorite poets of all time. He's still alive.
Now, where will we find his work?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I run co-edit this micro press for poetry called Cocklebur Press, and we're getting ready to put out Bob's manuscript, so it'll be out in the next probably 6 months or so. It'll be out, but as for now, I think you can Google it. He's had work in various literary magazines and journals, and I'm sure you can find some of his work online.
And his name is Bob Phillips.
Bob Phillips from Toledo, Ohio.
Toledo, Ohio. Everyone remember Bob Phillips. From
Toledo, he's great.
Ohio.
He'll break your heart.
I'm not sure I need that. share another piece with us, please.
Sure. I'll read this one. This one, the title of the poem is Berdan and Roanoke or Miles Davis for French Film. And the Miles Davis for French Film is in reference to the soundtrack that Miles Davis did for this 1958 French movie. The translation of the title is Elevator to the Gallows. The poem is Berdan and Roanoke or Miles Davis for French Film. She's in a junkie's jacket and a borrowed car, ducked out on the tab at the diner and left the state to raise the kids. Skipped off north, snowed in and tucked away, hidden at the corner of Berdan and Roanoke, spitting blood from a lifetime of nightlife. Dying from 34 years of slow suicide, coming in soft and low. Miles Davis for French Film. A penchant for hits, or a pinch hitter for a pinch, a squeeze, followed closely by a freebie. Not a handout. I guess she earned it. Griping about the high life in an obscure dialect of Old English, the needle and the damage done, singing, how can the night be over when the party hasn't even really begun? Daylight signifying nothing more than a need for more comfortable environs. She's got a couple of lawsuits pending. The mystical check hovering above and just ahead. The mythical shroud of paid off of the easy days. Forever bug-eyed and waiting for more, more, more. A fresh wave of Xanax blue or China white to lift her up. The chariots plushed against her aching, weary bones. Into the realm of the eternal. Holy, holy, habitudinous visions of God and grandeur, beauty and destiny, sickly sweet heaven and snowbound languorous hell. Happy days, uninterrupted. Yet she remains, for today at least, but just until the check comes in. Sing it with her, but just until the check comes in. Thanks.
It's a very powerful piece of poetry, A.S. I really enjoyed reading it. You know, one aspect of your work that really intrigues me is your use of character or characters. Whether you embrace first-person perspectives or write in the third person, you seem to want to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And again, that goes back to empathy. Not so much to tell a story as to understand a different way of life. Could you tell me more about the characters in your work?
Yeah. I've always been fascinated by anybody that's not me. I think I'm really boring. Everybody knows who they are for the most part. The funny thing is, like, I don't think I've ever really known. I've always lived my life vicariously through books or other people or watching people. I'm a huge people watcher. So characters have always come kind of second nature to me because it's easier for me to look and analyze and to have a remote setting and to process emotions and feelings and motivations. So characters are really fun to explore yourself vicariously, you know.
All right. Please share again.
Sure. And this one actually, yeah, this one has a character. Okay. This one I wrote when I was out in Sleeping Bear Dunes up in Michigan for a weekend. I was at a bar and I slightly overheard a conversation, and this is a poem that resulted from it. It's called Another Three Lonely Ones. Oh yeah? Okay, good. Yeah, if you like it, it came out in this really neat poetry thread called Rasputin that's edited by Joe Milford. Yeah, and he actually just put out an anthology of a lot of the works from it, and this is actually in one of them.
All right, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Another Three Lonely Ones. I don't have a problem, Chelsea. I overheard him from across the nearly empty noontime bar. Sun, weak as stale tea, filtered in hazily through cracked blinds and dusty windows. The summer crowd had ceased thinning out over a month ago. It has stopped entirely now. You said you did last night, she persisted. You said so yourself. A stool creaked in their direction. I was drunk when I said that. An awkward pause stretched out like the endless horizon of pale blue. Lake Michigan, not a stone's throw from where I sat. I could almost feel the little strings of pelting sand. I could almost feel the little stings of pelting sand off Sleeping Bear Dunes, and the hanging mist of the Great Lakes spit haloed like a bad reputation not readily dealt with. The barkeep, quite suddenly, found something that required his immediate attention in the dark recesses of what I assumed was the kitchen. The bat-wing doors beat an off rhythm, doubling with each swing as the rusty hinge screamed and squawked, piercing the stagnant air like a quietus keen, stabbing it, shooting it through like the period, a black hole slashing all, serving as the termination of the sentence of whatever relationship had just ended. I took a long pull from the bottle of beer. Ice beneath my fingers slipped down the label and pulled on the waxed and shining wood, the only thing aside from the beer that looked well kept in the place. I peeled a corner of the label off the bottle and watched the little icebergs flow south as gravity steered us towards our eventual endings, collective and apart, together but alone, always alone, really. You know what? Her voice was triumphant in her bitter disappointment and resentment now. You are the problem, Josh. I heard the door shut behind her, the beaten bells clanging their discordant knell, a beck and call as much for the barkeep as for us all, as I finished what was going to be my last beer of the afternoon. The barkeep reemerged from the kitchen with a glass and a rag. He took a quick glance in the direction of the problem, Josh, then set down the glass in front of me. It was chipped and battered. There had been a logo on it some years ago, but it was indecipherable now. A cryptic, vaguely female eye peeking out of a wash of faded colors and jangled letters. Thought you might like a glass. We both looked down at my empty bottle and waited. Oh, the weight of the weight. I hadn't asked for a glass with any of my four previous beers, nor had one been offered. I smiled and slid another three lonely ones across the bar just as the door closed a second time. Thank you.
It's a very, very, it's an epic work. You know, as I'm thinking about it, to you, what are some of the most prevalent ingredients that go into this concoction that we call a poem? How did you develop that particular?
Well, that one, there was a private agony happening at this bar 10 feet from where I sat, doing my best to ignore the happening of said, you know, tragedy. And like sometimes poems fall into your lap. I had a bar napkin and a pen, and I was already working on something, trying to pass time. And this started happening. I just kind of started scribbling, and then, you know, the rest of it kind of just fell into place. Some poems are like that. They don't seem to require that much work as opposed to, like, just dusting off. Like, it's already there. You just got to clean it up a bit.
Let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back with A.S. Coomer. Back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm over here with A.S. Coomer. This is Quintessential Listening Poetry, better known as QLP. A.S., one more question for you before we open up the lines to callers. Many poets have different methods for their writing. Some write on paper and then transmit to the blog. Others type their work in or out and then transfer it. What is your preferred writing method?
I would prefer with poetry to write it out with a pen. Just skip the pencil thing. Just get it out in ink, best of your ability, and worry about it later. So pen and paper is the best way for poetry for me.
That's real old school.
Yeah.
But it works for you.
It does. I edit in a word processor, but usually it's most of the editing is just scribbling onto the page beside it too, but.
You know, they say that to see the world with complete honesty, one should look to comedians, artists, and poets. What do you think naturally emerges from your work?
That's a good question. What do I think naturally emerges from my work? I would say stories, usually. And you can definitely, if you look at the big bulk of what I do, there's some thematic links involved as well. I tend to touch on similar works or similar topics, loss and grieving and also like depression and how to deal with that. There's topics I would like to explore eventually too. So I would like it one day for some humor to emerge from my work, but I haven't quite gotten there yet.
Okay. Because your work is very heavy. It really makes you think. You know, I think it's time for us to open up the line to callers, and we do have callers. And hold on 1 second. Caller, area code 301-710, you're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Hi, AS. This is Marianne.
Hello, Marianne. How are you tonight?
A little tired, but I'm glad that we have this poetry show tonight. It's good to to hear your poetry, A.S., and my husband enjoyed it, too.
Oh, well, thank you.
Do you have any questions for A.S.?
Oh gosh. I knew you were going to ask that.
Well, if not, you can listen, because it's
extremely
talented.
I think maybe tonight I'll listen. I know after I put down the phone on the table, I know that I'm going to come up with questions, but I think for tonight I'll just listen. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Well, thank you, Marianne, for calling in.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for your work with The Song Is.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. A.S., I'd like to read one of your works, if that's okay.
Sure.
This particular piece is titled For the City of Light, November 13th, 2015. Would you like to explain the piece before I read it?
I mean, I wrote it while simultaneously seeing the horrendous terrorist attacks that were happening in Paris that evening. That's about the only backstory I can really tell you.
Yeah, I assumed it was Paris. There is an emptiness. Some try to fill it with bullets, with things that go pop or go boom. There is an emptiness. Some try to fill it with fire, with burning, with blaze and gas and black mask. There is an emptiness that some try to fill with darkness, but is already filled with darkness, to the metaphoric brim with the darkness. There is enough of that in the world without your malice. There's enough suffering without your ill intent, without your rabid power grabbing, without your delusions of grandeur, without your senselessness, without your utter selfishness. With the strongest voice in my quiet self, I will sing, and the song will not do justice. It will right no wrongs. It will not praise or declaim. It will not be enough, but I will sing. Would you finish it, A.S., because it's very powerful, and I don't think I can do it justice.
You want me to read the whole thing or just the last little bit?
From where I ended.
With the strongest voice in my quiet self, I will sing. And the song will not do justice. It will right no wrongs. It will not praise or declaim. It will not be enough. But I will sing.
You know, that situation in Paris, that time was very, very hard to fathom.
Yeah. For the longest time, I'm a musician as well, and it seemed like between each gig that I had scheduled, some other terrible, violent atrocity would have happened, and I started so many of my sets reading that poem. I feel like there's a starting point there, when you acknowledge the violence, and then to at the end of it, when I say I will sing, I'm saying my little part in making art may not change all this violence, but I'm going to say that your violence is not going to change the fact that I'm going to make art, and art's going to be made.
I think that's why it was so powerful to me and why it touched me so much that I could not finish it. I will sing. Despite all the odds, despite the difficulties, I will sing.
Yeah.
You know, as a poet, poets often have several words that come up over and over again. Words or sentences that they just can't help but use in their work. What are three of your most absolute favorite words?
It's funny you mention that. I'm editing a new novel now, so that when I'm writing, everything comes out real fast and hot, and I don't really pay attention to that. But then as I'm reading back through and editing, I notice that there are words and phrases that tend to pop up all the time. And in this last thing, there's been dust, ash, and brittle. Those are the three words that I've used more than any other words, dust, ash, and brittle.
Okay. Why do you use those three words?
You know, I think it's kind of like the painter who really likes different shades of blue, because I think all three of those words are trying to convey the same thing contextually to what I'm working on now. So it's kind of like that. It's like working with different shades of blue, or, you know, whatever color you're working with for whatever you're working on.
Well, do you have another piece for us tonight?
Oh, sure, I do. And this one goes out to Marianne from the song Is, because she published this. It's called Flirting with Disaster. My mother lost everything she owned twice in house fires. She smokes like a goddamn chimney, always has. I guess we all flirt with disaster in our own terms. I tend to spend too much time alone. I'm not good on my own. You see, I get these itchy fingers and bad ideas. I got this circling mind and backload upon backload of misplaced time, and it all makes me cringe. I guess we all flirt with disaster in our own terms. And I know people with fixations. Addictions come in many shapes and sizes. It's not all brown bottles and little plastic baggies. They tend to bumper car through life, shielded, however scantily, by ideology, belief, substance, or everyday wishful thinking, leaving a little tread here, a little rubber bumper there, until they're skating, as the proverb goes, on thin ice. I guess we all flirt with disaster in our own terms. And isn't this sounding like a song? Something loud, bluesy, abrasive, sweating right along with the cheap domestic light beer on top of the rattling busted amp. I'd make it one if I could play lead, but I've always been out here on the offbeat in a jerk and sway rhythm section that no one wants to listen to. Way. Sing it, brother. Yeah, all right. Just not tonight, okay?
Yeah, I like that piece too. You're a very prolific writer, and you're quite accomplished. Does knowing that your poems have been published and are out there in the world, does it validate your being a poet, or are you content knowing that they're out of your system?
Sitting still is really hard for me. I feel like you could always improve. There's always more stories to tell. So, I mean, getting it out of the system is one thing for sure, but then honing it, crafting, and then having somebody else feel strongly enough about it to put their stamp of approval on it and putting out to the world is something nice, too.
Well, do you have a writing group or a community of writers that you share your work with?
I did briefly in Toledo, Ohio. I recently just moved back to Western Kentucky, and I don't have a cohort of writers here just yet. But I've got some lifelong friends around the world that I can always bounce stuff off of electronically or by snail mail.
Mm-hmm. What would you share with an aspiring poet in terms of what to do, where to go, how to go about it?
Oh, read everything. The stuff they tell you is good, the stuff they tell you is bad, the stuff that's selling, read everything. And never stop writing, ever.
And never stop writing.
Yeah, ever.
ever. Do you have one poem that you almost did not put into any of your into fruition because it was too personal? So do you have any poems like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've got several. I usually don't read a lot of those because of that fact. But I do have one that I wrote for a dear friend of mine that's is going through cancer. And it was really hard to, you know, there's a line in there you'll hear as my friend got some bad news, therefore I got some bad news. We go back to empathy again here. When you love somebody, when you consider them close, friend or family or what have you, when they experience hard times, you experience those hard times too. So I got one more poem if you wouldn't mind me sharing it.
Oh, yes, please.
Sure. This is called The Straightening of the Path, and it's for my good friend Michael D. Grover. Sometimes the songs come in backwards. The radio cinched in to the old car battery got it wrong, maybe. The towers shooting out their noise, ones and zeros or bits and pieces, got crossed with some other invisibility, perhaps. I don't know. Little snatches of the way things are, then how they're coming in, at odds with the way I breathe, the way the air formulates into crystals in my mind, shrouding my lungs in a cave of ice, stalactites and stalagmites of purpose, the machinery in motion, but with a timetable strictly adhered to. My friend got some bad news, meaning I too got some bad news. The tunnel system is working against us, his especially. It's burrowing, it's twisting and turning through the nows and thens and winds is straightening. It's decided to take a more direct route. And this hurts. Sure, like hell it hurts, but, and maybe only just but, will the tunnel straighten enough for him to see? To really see. Not this haphazard thing we struggle to complete each day, upside down and backwards, faulty at best. Maybe the straightening of the path will give him a glimpse of the light, if there is a light. Maybe there will be something there, not your imaginary reflection, a friend waiting with hand outstretched, an understanding, a peace, or maybe just the mind-clearing breath of unobstructed Terranean air, the sun, the actual light of being unmitigated and free. I hope he keeps his eyes open. Thanks.
When people hear your work, I'm sure they want more. What's next for you as a poet?
I'm working on compiling some poems together to start sending out for a chat book. I've got a couple novels out, but I don't have any collections of poetry out yet. I've had several bunches of poems published like in various literary journals and magazines and whatnot, but never a collection. So I think that's my next goal as a poet, is to get a collection out there.
Tell me about some of your novels. That I mentioned, Terry.
Yeah. The first one, my first novel was called Rush's Deal. And as of right now, it's a Kindle only, but the paperback edition is coming out through Litfest Press here in the next couple months. And it's a Faustian tale, coming of age, also with a non-visual comic book involved as well. And then my second novel, The Fetishists, is a very brutal work of subversion literature. I took a very entitled individual and flipped his situation in the worst ways I could imagine. So it's kind of dark. And then this newest novel that I just had came out is called Shining the Light. And it's the autobiography of a musician who never actually existed. And then coming out very soon is another novel called The Devil's Gospel. And it's an out-and-out thriller set in the Red River Gorge area of eastern Kentucky.
Well, let me ask this question. Do you prefer one or the other, poetry or fiction? Do you prefer
one
or...
I like... They both offer me something separate and enjoyable. I really like fiction. Fiction's like a long run, you know. It's not a sprint. Poetry is a sprint to me. And they're two different things, and I really enjoy both of them for their separate facets.
Well, I'd like to thank you for being a guest on Quintessential Listening Poetry. You're a fantastic guest. I mean, I could talk to you all evening. I've got thousands of more questions that I'd love to ask, but time would not allow it. So thank you.
I really appreciate you having me. Thank you for having me.
Thank
I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're more than welcome. To everyone in our listening audience, please join us next week when we continue this journey of inviting fabulous, fantastic poets to share their works on the air. Thank you very much and good night.